first meeting of the year, New Year 2018. Happy New Year's to everybody.
Happy New Year.
We're trying to get Kelly on the line, I guess, still. So we'll see how that works. We don't have anybody signed up for public comment. Right?
Maybe.
Oh, okay. I didn't see a name on there, so I don't. Okay. All right.
He expressed interest in the Grand Canyon, so maybe we'll just save until we get to that.
All right, with you?
What's that?
You expressed interest in the Brandon County?
In progress towards resolution.
Public comment is at the beginning.
Okay.
It's going to happen.
Okay, so you don't have any public comment. You're just kind of interested in the progress.
Well, I'll leave my comment as this, and then I won't have to.
Okay.
I attended, as I walked in, I mentioned that I attended a meeting at the center in relation to this.
He says, I'm also trying to call or get called.
Example of bad behavior that I've been a part of in a long time. Remember the folks that were on the opposite side of the fence that didn't want it to happen. And I had to leave early. I couldn't see any constructive outcome of the meeting that happened, and none did. There was just amazing the rudeness, the misinformation, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
I think the intention is really good, and it's a possible complex problem to solve, but there has to be a better way than people yelling at each other.
We like to have a more constructive way.
Yeah, right.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And you, sir? Do you? No, okay. All right. Okay. Great.
Hey, Laura, what number did we call?
Yeah.
He's trying to get hold of us. Sorry about that.
Okay, then.
He's asking for a number to call. He says, have them give you the number, and I will work on it from this end.
Our names.
All right, so we'll keep moving forward here. Any guest introductions? I don't think we have any guests today, do we?
No.
Okay, all right. Then I'll call for review and adoption of the...
Could I just request one thing?
Yeah.
I noticed at the beginning of the meetings that we don't go around and introduce ourselves to our guests, nor do we make a record, because even though we all know who's here, it's being recorded, and in future, that kind of helps reinforce the attendance.
Okay.
Is there a problem with that?
No.
Okay.
No, we can do that. So in that vein, Bill, you want to start?
You bet. Bill Gierke, Parks Manager.
All right.
Mackenzie Shao, Student Liaison for Union High School.
Dave Weston, Parks Advisory Board.
New Dad.
New Dad, that's right. Jay Chester, Parks Advisory Board.
Kelsey Potter, Parks Advisory Board.
Sarah Rose, Student Liaison for Columbia River.
John Spencer, Parks Advisory Board.
Jennifer Halleck, Parks Advisory Board, Vancouver Public Schools.
Laura Hilty, Clark County Parks Administration.
Barbara, you want to?
Jeremy McKay, Parks Staff.
Thanks. Barbara Anderson, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. We'll make sure we do that from now. All right. Adoption of the November 3rd meeting minutes.
So moved.
It's been moved. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
It's been seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
Next time it does that, we should all say aye.
We should what?
I'll say J. Say I. Anyway.
All right.
I thought it was funny, John.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll move into unfinished business. Bill, you want to go through a budget update, please?
Sure. So we are now into the second year of our two-year biennial budget. And I think I reported as to our last fall supplemental where we had 17 decision packages submitted, and all but one were approved, which was fantastic.
What?
And so we're highly successful. I've never been this successful before in our request to the board. And of course, the only one that didn't get approved was the grant writer. But we did talk about it right prior to the adoption, and the budget office wants us to provide a business plan to support the grant writer, and then the board would like us to do a work session with them, and then they'll reapproach it again. I'll probably go after it this spring, although they said we cannot ask for staff in the spring supplementals, but I'm going to try it anyways. But we'll see what we can do. Also, spring supplemental is already upon us because we are going into a different type of budgeting. It's going to be priority-based or program-based budgeting, which is unique to, well, we have never done it before. And so they want to expedite that, which means that the spring supplementals are actually due by the end of this month instead of end of March. So we just got through a budget cycle. Now we're right back into another one. So we're not going to be as needy on this next spring supplemental as we were before. So hopefully it should go fairly well. That's really about it for the budget as far as report.
How are you going to address the grant writer? You said they want us to come up with a business plan.
The mindset is that the grant writer would basically be busy during the even years when we apply for the RCO grants. I think we really need to spell out all the different types of grants, you know, corporate grants and private grants and public grants that we can potentially go after. We also need to spell out the grand scheme of what we're going after in grants. So what I proposed in our last fall supplemental was, in addition to just regular parks grants, trail grants, we are going after the Lewis and Clark trail grants, probably not this cycle, but the following cycle. But also Camp Bonneville is looming, and we are entering into the master planning process for Camp Bonneville. We're going to have multitudes of grants for each one of those two big projects. And so it's not going to be just every other year, every even year with RCO. We're going to be going after grants left and right. So we need to identify how to keep this person busy, if you will. In my mind, I think we could probably bury two people pretty easily in grants, but I have to convince everybody of that.
Bill, I think it's really encouraging that they're still having you come back with that to have more dialogue. It means that they feel like this could have some real traction. They're just not comfortable yet.
Yes.
So I think it's really positive that they're going to have another session.
Yeah, it's good. They're not saying no. They're saying come back.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, we haven't been told no. That's awesome.
Convince us further. So I'm going to do my level best to try to do that.
I wonder if our parks and foundation team or other foundations have a business plan framework that they use when they employ grant writers to show what it is they do, what are the tasks, objectives, you know, what is the anticipated dollar amount to expenditure, you know, is it 2-to-1, is it 10-to-1, what is the industry saying that grant writers bring in versus what they're paid and all of that. If someone has that framework, I don't know of anyone, but
I'm not above plagiarizing anybody else's
work. I wonder if our foundation has something or can get their hands on something like that for you to use as a framework so you don't have to go through all that work in 2 weeks or so when your next budget's due.
Sure.
Maybe
that's a good
call to each of the cities saying, how much are you spending on your grant writer? How many grants did you receive in?
Right.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Typically, grant writers, they earn their own keep pretty easily.
Quickly.
And the one thing I have done, so this was our sixth time at bat. So we're still going after it. The one thing we did do is we went from strictly grant writer to grant writer / planner. Is the one thing that we have been kind of suggesting or advocating for is that this person, this grant writer, is actually in charge of the capital facilities plan and making sure that we're trying to meet all those goals. So somebody's with their eyes on it on a daily basis. So so that didn't really get us a lot more traction than before. I started that whole scheme back in 2015. So
we'll
just keep evolving and trying to work towards that goal.
Good
job. Okay.
That's always frustrating because you think the grant writer is a no-brainer.
You would think, yeah.
Focus on the other side that we got all the other budget requests, though.
Yeah, it was very positive.
Yes.
Result.
Yeah,
that's
no,
great.
I was quite pleased.
Okay. How about a PIF update?
Parking pack fees, still rolling in at a really, really good pace. They, obviously, the first year that this was implemented back in 2016, 17, that was an 80% increase with PIF since the 2003. And so this year, as of 2018, we're getting our 10%, which has already been implemented. So now we're at 90% increase. 2018 will be the final, the 100%. In addition to the 10% increase, there's also a 3% inflationary factor. And they implemented the 10% increase, and they came back and says, hey, we just did this. Should we go after and ask for the 3% again? Heath was asking me. I said, well, no. It's going to really raise some eyebrows if we go back and have two increases. I'm thinking that we can either look at it next year when we get the third 10%, or we can, after the 2019 year, we'll just say, yeah, from every year after here, 3%, start tacking it on automatically. So trying to take the middle road here, high road, but yet the middle road. I'm not trying to be the hogs at the trough. I don't want to upset the apple cart too much, but I am really, really pleased at the amounts of monies that have been coming into our PIF accounts. And so the projects that I've been kind of thinking are years down the road are actually not that far off because of the amounts of money that have been coming in on a monthly basis. So if you look at the combined accounts, in many cases, we're really looking at some parks that we can complete, you know. The only one that I'm... Hey, Barbara. Oh.
Did you answer?
I did.
Kelly? Hello?
So PIF 10 is actually starting to really take off, which I'm really pleased to see, because that one was just, in the last year, it really did nothing. And now I'm seeing some construction going on out there, and which is great, because we still have two MPD parks yet to build out of PIF 10, so which means, you know, we're looking at $1 million a piece. So I'm happy to see that the monies are coming in a little bit more, but we still have ways to go.
Are we closing on that property in 10?
What's that?
Are we closing on that property in 10 now that it's
done?
It's done.
As of January 2nd, we closed. And in fact, Jeremy and I went out there yesterday and walked it with the asbestos abatement survey folks. So we're going to fence it and turn it into a green space. And Jeremy's actively working on it right now. So.
Bill, thanks for continuing the MPD parks commitment and making it part of your work plan and priority. As a resident in the area, that's restored some of my sadness around the MPD concept. So it's coming to fruition. So I feel
it is
really good about that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, we've got two community parks left and two neighborhood parks, and
that's awesome.
And that is our highest priority, is to make sure we get those built as soon as possible. Then we can branch out and take a look at all these other properties we've been acquiring. And when we get the money, we'll develop them. So that's
awesome.
Great.
Okay. Lewis and Clark Trail update.
Okay. So did we talk about that? That was after our last PAB meeting, wasn't it? Yeah. So had a really, really good turnout. With the charrette, and a majority of all of our Parks Advisory members were there. I really appreciate your participation. Had a good representation from a lot of the different cities, and I was really, really impressed at the level of work that people put into this thing. I was trying to rack my brain and figure out how can we keep people busy for like 8 hours on a Saturday. And I mean, it went full length. I mean, we didn't shut down until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And people were really engaged within the different stations that they were at throughout the course of the day. I was thoroughly impressed at how that worked. And a lot of great ideas came from that. And so that were on paper. Dan and Brianna from the National Park Service they collected all the maps and they transcribed all the notes onto paper, you know, that we're going to take that and go into our follow-up meetings. So our next follow-up meeting from the Charette will be on the 18th, so next Thursday of January. And so, but no, we had a lot of folks. Kelsey's sister took photos, which I thought was wonderful.
I took the photos
took the
my sister's camera, and apparently half of them were blurry or not usable. So, do we have any of those to show people who didn't make it?
You know, I think we, Laura, did we load up some photos?
There is a PowerPoint with just a few of those photos.
Okay, great. Should we roll that up?
Okay. I'm sure we would love to.
Okay, we'll talk about it. We'll bring them up here in just a bit. So.
I did get an email with pictures, though.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have, on my computer, I think, we've got about 80 photos plus, and we got a lot of video.
Were some of the videos usable?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of interviews that were conducted, which I thought was fantastic. And so I think that we're going to try to roll this up into a promo that we're going to have CBTV help us with to make it a professional video that tries to sell the Lewis and Clark Trail. So that's going to be another big push for us. So so the hereinafter, our intent now is to start holding the post-Charette meetings. And our next one is on the 18th out at Richfield at the Community Center. And it's going to be very well attended. We've got WSDOT, that will be there. We've got the ports will be there. City of Richfield, the mayor, Ron Onslow, will be there. We've got the City of Vancouver. And so our focus will be in segments 1 and 2, which will take us from downtown Richfield to downtown Vancouver and everything in between. So segment 1 is Vancouver or Richfield to Vancouver Lake. Segment 2 is Vancouver Lake to downtown Vancouver. So primary focus is to make those critical connections in between the two. Having WSDOT in the room, I'm going to go after making a commitment or getting a commitment for them to try to turn over the Irwin O'Rieger Highway and its right of way to us, which in all is a 6-mile segment that takes us from Vancouver Lake Park all the way up to the southern edge of the River S unit of the National Wildlife Refuge in Richfield. So with that, the big hurdle that we've been facing with the National Wildlife Refuge is that the River S unit is drive vehicle only. You can't walk it. You can't get out of your vehicle. And we are trying to figure out ways in which we can go from the southern point of the wildlife refuge up to the bridge that enters into the wildlife refuge, which is about 1.5 miles. There's a suggestion of potentially, if we can't get it on land, is to put it on water. Just yesterday, Chris Lapp sent me a message and invited me to his Charette for the National Wildlife Refuge, where they want to introduce more public access to the site. So that's good news. And I was really, I'm anxious, and I told him I would absolutely be there. So I think that little by little, our stars are aligning. If we can get dedication of the of that right-of-way, and we can get some, it's probably going to take the National Wildlife Refuge, they're probably going to have to go to D.C. to get the regulation changed or the law changed, stating that we can have public access onto that property to the south, you know, other than vehicle only. So if we can make that happen, we're going to have a pretty serious shot at creating a real trail in the near future instead of far out. So then the next goal is to go from Vancouver Lake to the port of Vancouver, which we have talked about that in the past, and we want to do that. And so the port of Vancouver will be there, so we'll be discussing that as a priority. And yet another priority is to try to make a loop around Vancouver Lake itself. So we own a majority of the properties around between City of Vancouver and Clark County. And so we have two properties remaining, I believe, two or three properties that we will have to work on. And then Pat Lee, he's in the audience right now, he's working on that property transfer that we've been dealing with this last year, trying to go on the next phase, which is the Erickson Warner trade. And so there's a few key priorities that we want to try to really focus on and commit to. Once that meeting is done, we'll know exactly what our marching orders are, and then we can take a look at what grants we could potentially go after. Our next meeting will be the Vancouver to Cascade Park meeting, so that's a good share of the Highway 14. And then the third meeting will be Cascade Park to Washougal. So we're gonna try to consolidate into six segments into three meetings. So that's it. It's gonna be, we're gonna be moving through this, and with each meeting we'll evolve a little bit further. So I'm excited, there's hurdles all along the way, but they're not big enough that we can't jump over them. So I'm optimistic that we can keep this thing moving forward and continue to get buy-in from different folks. It seems like all the jurisdictions are involved. Our next step also, in addition to these meetings, is to go up to Olympia and give a presentation to our senators, make sure that they're on board so we can go after legislative funding with them, and they'll support whatever we put in front of them, I hope. So that's the intent. So it's moving along. So I want to thank all of you for your support in pushing this project forward. So I appreciate your participation.
How are we spreading the word on this?
On that meeting?
Yeah.
By invitation.
Okay.
So we sent out, so this follow-up meeting that you're talking about?
Uh-huh.
So that was by invitation, and talking to Dan, he wanted to keep it to a strong focus on the folks that are, the entities that are directly engaged.
So not like the general community.
Correct. Okay. We're going to have an open house to address that.
Okay.
Once we get through our three meetings in the three different, that cover all of the six segments, mm-hmm. we're going to actually start doing an open house series and try to get this out to the press and then start inviting. So we'll have the open house. It'll be open to everybody. Mm-hmm. So, 200, 300 people would be wonderful.
Okay.
That's the idea. So we want to start getting all of the public engaged. But right now we want to try to really focus on the scope of the work to be done. So that's the task. Dan was hoping to keep it to 25 people at these secondary meetings. It's really hard to do. There's so many people that want to be there. It's hard. So we met with Dan and Brianna this last week, and thank you, Kevin, for joining us. And Kelsey, sorry for the late notice. We didn't even get Dan locked in until
3 hours before.
The day before. I know. It's like that afternoon before, he wasn't sure if he's going to be able to make it or not. And he finally committed, so he said, oh, let's do it. So that's when we sent you out the notice.
That mile and a half section that's on the refuge that we were talking about access to, Dan was going to look into the master plan or the zoning for the refuge areas to see if there was any wiggle room for that mile and a half section to be either recategorized or used under its existing categorization.
He said it was truly tied up legislatively.
Okay.
And so, but then I got that message from Chris Lapp after the fact. And so that said that they're willing to take a harder look at public access, which is wonderful.
Good job.
So right now the Carty unit, which is where the plank house is at, that's open for public access. That's way up north of Richfield, which we are actually building the trail from Richfield, downtown Richfield, over to the plank house. And that's kind of a joint effort between Richfield, the county, and the wildlife refuge, the three. So the one thing that we're going to be talking about also at this coming meeting next Thursday, there's going to be two officials from the Kailas tribe. So Bill Ayal, I think he's the chairman of the Kailas tribe, he will be there. And Tana, is that her name? Tana will be there.
Mm-hmm.
So they are seriously looking at how we can make a connection over to
the Alinet,
right. So. Well, we'll take a look at that as well. So we actually created a map that shows Richfield, Le Center, and the area in between, so we can take a look at some alignments there. So, is that enough? Did I beat that one to death?
You're good.
It's exciting time.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Okay.
As you said, it's really starting to take shape, and hopefully a couple of hurdles gone, we'll
fail. Yes.
Very soon.
To piggyback onto that, Jeff, I am so sorry I was late. We have taken the PowerPoints that you sent to us, Bill.
Yep.
And one of the things that we're going to do is rework that PowerPoint for a marketing spin, and then we're going to be doing the circuit. So everything that about the Lewis and Clark Trail will be in every presentation that we make as an organization to neighborhood associations, chambers, rotaries, things like that. And so hopefully what we'll come up with in a PowerPoint is that can be shared. It's a marketing tool with graphics and all sorts of stuff to go along with it. We also meet with CREDC, Bill and I, to get our partners in the community involved in this, because the one thing that the trail does is bring economic development to this community through ecotourism, which is a new hot buzzword. So community partners from BIA, Clark County Association of Realtors, CREDCO, Identity Clark County, we need to make this a stakeholder issue because it drives so much in this county in terms of revenue. So in revenue are buzzwords that everybody likes, and economic development. And with all the people building apartments and hotels and all sorts of things, this is right up that alley. So hopefully by working together, we'll be able to position ourselves the really good story to tell and help drive this forward. And we're very excited to be a small part of that with you guys.
Well, thank you for keeping us connected politically. I appreciate that. So. That's really, really, Dan has really been helpful in trying to arrange some of these meetings with our Senate staff and whatnot.
I just drink and know things. Tyrion Lannister.
There you go.
Bill, do you want to do the pictures now? Or?
Yes, let's do it. Since we're still on the topic, let's try to go to. Let's see where we're at here.
Are these the clear ones?
Kevin, I don't know. Yeah, I took that.
No issues.
So, not the one on the right, but the one on the
just
left.
Just to clarify, the blurriness at this time has to do with our connection to the camera, to the computer.
Thank you, Laura.
The pictures were actually clear on my computer.
The tip of our HDMI cable blew off today. We were trying to hook it up, so we had to go back to the old technology. So, Dan Miller is on that last slide to the right. He's from the National Park Service, and he and Brianna are both... helping us through that technical service grant, and so that's kind of a look at the room of the charrette that we held down in Officers Row, and so it actually turned out to be a pretty good venue, really.
Yeah, wonderful day.
So it was good. We really appreciated it. There's enough room for six different groups to have a little bit of privacy, which worked out really well, and so it worked out great. Yeah. So right here is the segments. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 segments all together geographically. The sixth segment was dedicated to art, naming, connections.
The topics will be there when we get there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Next one. Segment 1, Vancouver Lake to Richfield. And this is kind of an illustration of the notes they're taking. Mm-hmm. So with that, with each segment, we had landscape architects who were stationed at each segment who were actually taking notes. And these landscape architects were we had students from
University of Oregon,
right? Mm-hmm. And we had the Society of Landscape Architecture was there. And those were the experienced landscape architects and professionals. And they did a wonderful job of actually facilitating each one of the segments. So, go to the next one. Segment 2, Vancouver to Vancouver Lake. That's that group. That's them working. Segment 3 is Vancouver to Cascade Park. Segment 4 is Cascade Park. Segment 5, that's just them working. Okay. Notes, lots of notes. Segment 5 is Camas to Washougal, so kind of like Cascade Park, or 192nd Avenue to Washougal, essentially. So, we're going to have some challenges on those three segments. So, we've got bridges, we've got railroads, and different
property
crossings.
Acquisition.
What's that?
You know, the property acquisition.
Yeah, we've got a lot of property to acquire along the Highway 14, so there's going to be some interesting challenges there. So, Trail 6, that was the trail design and signage, wayfinding, long distance trails, trail corridors, crossings, barely see that. Trailheads, interpreting business and ecotourism. And so they were kind of working on the holistic aspects of what this trail is going to have, all the amenities, different things, how it's going to look, presentation, all that. So that's going to be that's going to come into play with each one of our meetings, including the one next week on the 18th. So we want to make sure that group that group six discussion gets brought into all of our three meetings that are after that, the show here. So okay. So looking forward, that's what we're talking about, more meetings to come. January 18th is our next one. And the reason we wanted to push that one up forward to January 18th is because Mayor Ron Onslow is going back to Washington, D.C., and he's going to actually be promoting this trail on February 5th?
Yes.
February 5th. And so we want to make sure that he's got all the tools that he needs to go back to Washington, D.C. with and present this in the best possible way. So that's why we wanted to push this first meeting up. The second meeting will probably be somewhere around mid-February to March. So, and our third meeting will follow that. So, and that's it. So we're moving forward with this thing. I want to take full advantage of our technical service that we're getting from the National Parks. We've got them until October of this year, and I want to make sure that we've pretty much taken advantage of all the input that they can potentially give us and their expertise. So this is their second year with us right now. We've asked for an extension and we received it. So that's great. So it's taken us basically a year to get ready for the charrette. And now that we've got it, we can actually move forward and start really coming up with a finished product. And talking to Dan, so after we get done with these meetings, instead of going into a master planning phase, which he thinks is a waste of time, let's just go right into design and development. We'll start picking segments and start moving on it. So I fully agree. I mean, if we can get our scope, you know, narrowed down to, we got a really good idea of our alignment, you know, and our crossings and what we actually need to do, we can go straight after our permitting and design. So that's the intent.
Will the resources of those facilitators and those landscape architects be needed again in the future? Skilled. Well, I was really impressed by the facilitation skills.
I was
and
too.
The creativity.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it was just the one and only. Our intent is to actually go out and hire a consulting firm to really take it and run with it. Okay. So we give them the scope and get a firm collected. In doing that, of course, we have to do some fundraising and try to get some monies up to afford that that consulting service. And it's going to be a big contract.
What kind of money are we looking at?
I would probably think probably $300,000 would be a good start.
Yeah, so get cracking, Diana.
No, we can't.
Well, acquisition and development.
We can't use PIF money for trails.
Yeah. Guess that's going to be a heck of a bay sale.
Yes, it will. If I were looking at 47 miles of trails, that'd have to be designed. That's a lot. That's
I want
a lot.
It to be 50.
What's that?
I want it to be 50.
Yes. If we run it to the ALNA, it'll probably be 50.
Yeah.
Because that's about 3.5 miles away.
50 but just sounds good.
It does.
Attracts bicycle
Centennial
races
trail, right?
For a
golden.
But if you're hoping to raise 300K, I heard the word fundraising in there.
Well, yes.
So could you open up a special project account theoretically, and that could be something that grant money could go to, or I could find private donors to start making that a campaign?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. And we'll have to go, we'll probably be going out to all the different cities that are involved with us and us as a county and asking for some funding just to, so we pool our funding.
Okay.
And fundraising. And then if we have to do a legislative request, we can do that too. Just whatever we need to do to get the funding to keep this thing moving. So the intent is to not slow down. We want to keep the momentum up. We want to keep the excitement up for this project.
If we can coordinate on fundraising and doing that piece of it, we'll be happy to help that.
Love to. That would be wonderful.
That works so well for both of us in telling that story.
Yes.
So within that spectrum, sounds a little crass, but people always want to know what's in this for me. Is there an opportunity for us to maybe, I don't want to say sell, but naming rights for segments of
sure.
the trail?
Absolutely.
Because I can just see like that name of it. Wanting to own that ALNA trail segment and making a nice donation towards it.
You could have it adopt.
Adopt. I like that word better.
So
you're so good at that.
You have to put your name on it.
Absolutely. Have a segment saying this, or a sign saying this segment donated by.
Adopted by.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, you could have the East County Trail with the Fisher money, Ken Fisher, and you could have A-Lane, you could have, I don't know, any battleground big businesses. But.
Yeah, each and every mile could have a different adoptee, you know, so.
Yeah. Realistically, love it. Okay. So.
There's all kinds of ways that we can try to, you know, get creative to raise money.
And tie people back to it. I think the more we make other stakeholders, the more we bind them to us.
Mm-hmm. Yep, ownership.
Good point.
It's all about.
All right, so thanks for the update on the Lewis and Clark Trail.
Sure.
I want to note to the record that Councilor Bolt has shown up and is attending the meeting. Diana is in now, and I'm not going to try to pronounce your last name because I mess it up.
So simple. Crutchmar.
Crutchmar. Okay. All right. Just wanted to hear it from the person first. Get in trouble. And then Pat Lee is now sitting in attendance here, too. So want to note that. No problem. Yeah, you're fine. And you're up. How about the logo update?
Oh, it's my turn.
It's your turn, Barbara.
Toss that up in the rice, Jeremy. Oh, not that. No, the PowerPoint that I sent you.
Best throwback.
Yeah. That one isn't even complete, that handout, although I'm glad you put it in there because your printer works so much better than mine, Laura. So it's an exciting time for us. We're actually making some forward motion here. Go on to the next one. You know, we've talked a while about doing a logo. And the whole point of us creating a logo is that we want to build brand recognition, if you will, for the Parks Advisory Board. And this is important to us if we look at things like Diana is doing for us. For people to have familiarity with who we are and what we represent is important. So with that in mind, going forward, we want something that will instantly remind people, oh, the Parks Advisory Board. And by that, I mean, if you look at some of the really excellent examples we've got, you could go right through these three right up there, even if McDonald's didn't say McDonald's on it. Those golden arches tell you McDonald's. The swoop tells you Nike. And the other one is Pepsi. And the reason I point this out is that these symbols need no introduction. So on some of the logos that were submitted, there's no verbiage. And that might be a hesitation on our part that it doesn't say Parks Advisory Board or PAB or whatever. So I want you to keep in mind that sometimes that verbiage isn't necessary. And number two, that within the guidelines, we also have the ability to go back and have them fine-tuned should we feel that that is important to us. Okay? But we did wrap it up on December 31st. At midnight, and I have to say I was a little surprised because I had been in contact with many of these schools directly, and I was for sure thinking Camas was going to have stuff. And Fort Vancouver, I mean, talking with their art teacher, it sounded like they were. But it is what it is, and we did end up with 42 entries. Some of them appear to be duplicate, but it's because there was partnering. I talked with the art teachers to find out. You know, I don't see the difference here. What is it? And then they explained that there was some partnering and we didn't have any rule against that. So that's good. But we're at a point now where, what are the next steps? Well, the next steps are, I sent out and got the response where Kevin and Diana and Melotta have agreed to work on the pre-selection to help hone these down so you don't have to go through 42 logos. And we're going to bring it back to you, the top 10, to work from. So that's our next step. And I wanted to let the group know exactly what it was that we're going to be looking at. so that if we're missing something, you can bring it to our attention now before our meeting next Friday. So let's face it, it's all subjective, right? Because what I like isn't necessarily what you like. But there are certain things that we're looking for in these designs. First of all, does it look like a logo? Because not all things can really be branded as a logo to where it tells you. Some of them are just kind of fun. And like I said, they'd look good on a t-shirt, for example. I love, love, love it. But I wouldn't really want it for the logo that branded my team. Okay? So we're looking for things that will look good aesthetically on our website in conjunction with our Clark County logo, because we plan to use it with that, right? Or on a little business card. Those are some of the visual drivers that we're going for. So specifically within that, let's see, next slide. We're going to go through and evaluate each journey, next one. We're going to look at five different aspects. We're going to look at the design style, which is basically the shape, size, and balance. We're going to try to bring to it a number that we can assign for artistry and the aesthetic quality. The color is important. So we're going to be looking at the actual hues and colors. And I have to say that some of that was surprising, because looking at the first ones that came through and then the hues that were on the ones I had Troy retransmit to us, totally different. The second time through, they were actually acceptable. The first time through, you know, that really limey green mm-hmm. that's real popular with the teens now, a lot of them appeared like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here is a point, guys. If you look at the Parks Foundation logo in those light colors, it comes out as puce. I mean, and you can't replicate that lime green. It's also hard. We've got a different color in our logo. That light turquoise is hard to see. Yeah. So some colors don't translate well in different mediums.
There's something nice about black and white.
Yeah. Yeah. Says a man. Well,
when I was looking at these, to jump in on that, when I was looking at these, I love the creativity and those really great ideas. Most of them aren't what I would call clean. And so what we might end up doing is select, and just a thought, is select a logo, but then take it to a professional designer to clean it up, basically.
Well, I didn't give you the EPS formats.
Oh.
Because the EPS are much more difficult to, most people don't have a reader that will read the EPS, unless you're a printer. I mean, not many people can afford to have Adobe Photoshop or something high-end like that on there. So I sent you the JPEGs.
And one thing we'd be willing to do on the foundation side is I have a graphics designer on staff that we pay for every month. So if we have a logo that we set on, we'll be happy to clean it up, tweak it, you know, and make it look a little more presentable, and then get it back to everybody.
Yeah.
But with the same, you know, keeping the format, the idea, the content.
Yeah, the concept. Because that takes us to the next two points, which are the biggies, the originality, and I think that I've spoke with each of the art teachers, so I know that those are original works of the students. But within that, is it innovative? Because some of those are really, I would never have thought of. Mm-hmm. Love them.
Yeah.
And the other and most important part is its relevance to us. Does it say PAP? Some of them are great and beautiful, but it doesn't really say PAP. So those are the things that we're going to be looking at and scoring at each of these on.
I also believe scalability is important. I don't know if that goes...
That's where the EPS comes in.
Yes.
Well, right, but some of those were very, detailed, I guess, especially if you're going to scale it down to business card size or something. Yeah. You're not going to see what's going on.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah.
And Barbara, could I propose that your pre-selection committee maybe narrow it down to 5? I think 10 is still a lot for all of us to
then vote
on.
Well, we're going to take the 10 down to 3 and then the final 3. And we'll talk about that in just a little second.
Okay.
Scalability. I think that that was why we went to EPS format. But the one thing that we did tell them in our original, and we discussed it at the time, is that we were not going to require it to go down small enough to be a favicon.
Right.
Because
to be
then
a what?
You get into ones that
you
are...
You lost me. To be a what?
When you go to a website and instead of... it comes up with an image and with associated with that website. That's what that is. And it's really tiny.
What's the name of it again?
It's called a favicon. F-A-V-I-C-I-O-N, I think.
It's a term for me.
It's a computer term. It's just
it's
a computer
like a
term.
Type of
it's a little, it's where you shrink the graphic down so small that when you like go to Clark County, if the Clark County logo came up for any of the websites that are Clark County.
Gotcha.
And I don't remember if it does that or not. But we said that it does not need to shrink to that size.
But still, the busier, and I'm just going to say this, the busier the logo, it's going to be difficult if you want to transpose it to a t-shirt, if you want to put it on a business card, if you want to put it on the small part of a mailer.
Those are all going to be issues that we need to take a look at.
There's a reason your three examples work, because...
Exactly.
But you can see it. It's clear. Even our county logo, you can tell what it is. There's not a whole lot.
The simplicity of
yes.
it. That, yes. Any rate, but those are the things that our team will be looking at. And scalability, we'll stick that in there. We've got a little spreadsheet that we're going to go in, and I've asked each of you to, and I've got your disks here, so that you've actually got the files. Yeah, the old-fashioned CD.
Holy
well,
cow.
Because some people have a problem
that?
Downloading
better than floppy.
All those gigs of
right.
data. So I did for them the files on
Do you have a disk
CD.
Reader?
No.
You're cracking me up. I know.
No, it's a CD. It's a CD. I'm sorry. I would have done jump drives, but they were too expensive.
Oh.
I have no budget. Anyway, no, some people were. I was going to put them out on my cloud, but some people had problems with the speed downloading because those are big files.
Well, if you use Dropbox, we can't get it on our computers because of the firewalls.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and then there's people like Bill who. I tried to give you a copy of it, and 15 meg, really? That's your max?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's about
yeah.
what I have to.
Anyway, so we'll be going through, we won't expect that details from you guys, because when we get done, and here's where we'll talk about the 10. Out of 42, for us to whittle it down to 10, I think is going to be a challenge.
Do you, though?
I guess
either,
I
guys. I see, like, maybe.
Okay.
It's like shopping.
Okay. How about with your grain of seven?
If you take 20 things in
sure.
Room,
I think 10 is
I'll come in the middle and say seven. Well, only because I do think that there are some that are worth at least a discussion.
But you're going to prioritize three.
Yeah. Well, no. Here's what my thought is, because I had a couple of questions on this. First of all, I wanted to look at the fact that when we vote, it is stated by ordinance that the only voting members here are us, the PAB itself.
Okay.
And yet we have got Diana, the two schools, and our youth that I think have a very valuable input to this, and our staff who support us. And I would like to ask the team if there is any objection to when we go to vote on this logo, if we might include those individuals in making the selection. Does anybody object to that?
Only if I can.
Well, how about when we, Bill, I kind of ran this past Bill, because mm-hmm. I certainly didn't want to look like we were wanting to violate our ordinance. That's not my intent. My intent here is I think that our staff and our ex officio members, that their opinion counts and is important for us to weigh in on. But when we get to the actual vote on the logo itself, that be done only by the PAB.
So what I do where I work, I'm a contractor. I'm not a full-time employee. So when I do evaluations, they take my thoughts, vote, and they put it in, but I'm not part of the official accounting of the vote. So
exactly.
That's what we need to do. And that would be great.
So when we go through the first, yeah, when we go
yeah,
through
when
the first
Yeah, when you go through the whole thing, and even when it gets to the final.
Yeah.
But the final vote will be PAB members. Over.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
So from the top three, I thought we could strip it down to three. And then from the top three, then we'll make that final selection. Now within that, I think that there are some things that we need to do that are very important. One is, first of all, we need to get a letter out. I was hoping it could go under your signature, thanking people for submitting entries.
Okay.
That's the first one, is acknowledge every single person who submitted. And then I think that the top 10, we want to notify them and say, you've made it into the finals, okay? Because I think this communication, that part of that is preparing these wonderful young youth for future work in their community. And by acknowledging, honoring their participation, I think that's important. And then within that, we've got our donations. And I was kind of at a stopping point because we've got Phillida, who has agreed to pay for the plaque. So the Phillida Neighborhood Association has agreed to that. And then, of course, I was able to twist my daughter's arm, and she did a $50 gift card and two $25 gift cards for Regal Cinema, and the other one was a Visa. But that just didn't seem appropriate to me. For the amount of effort and time that these students have put in. So I went down and I talked with our pal, Diana, and said, you said I could come and ask for a bag, and here I am. And she came up with some really great ideas on how to honor these students. And I'll let her speak to some of her ideas.
Well, I'm dumb as a stump, so I went immediately to Dave Perlick and said, hey, Dave, how would you like to give me some prizes for the county PAB board? And he said, absolutely. So what we're looking at is for the top prize winner, we're hoping to get a family swim party for 10 with the bracelet and a party room.
Nice.
Then we hope... That's the big one he has to talk to Julie about, but he thinks he can make it happen. And then for the other top three winners, they will get a monthly pass to Loop Key or the Marshall Center or Furstenberg Center for their whole family.
Yeah, so, they can't come to Loop Key. They're not old enough.
Well, Marshall, yeah.
I'm teasing you.
So, yeah. I spent way too much time at Loop Key. So we'll have the community pass for the second and third winner. And then what I thought I would do is, because these kids did it for the Parks Board, let's keep them involved and engaged in parks, trails, and recreation. So if I can get that from the city, I was hoping what we could do is either take it, look at you guys giving a parking pass for like a year, the parking pass for the parks. If you can't donate that, maybe we can find a way to get it funded through a community, you know, saying, hey, would you sponsor this? Phil Benzay's Hardware, pay for this, and then I'll put you as that person who did that. So more than one way to skin a cat on that one, so we can have those parking passes.
Sounds like we can do that.
So we make it all tied back to parks, trails, and recreation. I've also got a call out to the Rock Pizza to see if I could get a pizza for family, you know, for the winners, for the top one, two, and three. And I think that'll happen. So make it kind of about using the very things you made a logo for. So I think we'll be able to accomplish all that. And I'm really excited that the city wants to get back involved and help us.
I think that speaks volumes. I loved it. Loved it.
And then we can share that they were involved in it too, that we were all committed.
Yeah. And then, of course, following that, when we get the baskets together, and I guess Holly will find out what's in it so she can write something nice for you, counselor, because we are on your agenda for the evening meeting for December. March.
Okay,
we're not going to wait till this March, and I think that's the 6th. And so we are holding you at your promise that you're going to take these young people and make them feel wonderful for what they've done.
Yeah, very good.
And is that it? Yes, sir.
But that's kind of where we're at with it, and I'm really jazzed. There were some other ones that came in after this, clarifications that are in the one I've got on your CD, Laura. So it's got all 42 of them there. But yeah, so we want to be on the agenda for February for us to spend some time as a group going through the top seven.
Okay.
That's great. Do that.
Some of these say needs to be translated. What do you mean by that in there? Some of these have written down needs to be translated.
Where?
What do you mean? Well, I don't know. I'll have to look at the numbers.
This one for
this wasn't supposed to go with this.
Yeah, on the pictures, I wasn't.
Yeah, this was not supposed to go with it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh. Well,
I had to get back to them because the requirement was JPEG and EPS. And I personally do not have Adobe Photoshop, but a printer would want your EPS format.
Okay. That's what you mean by translate. It would be transferred into some type of a material, not translated.
Yeah, they needed
it.
Yeah. And I spent some time going back and forth with these teachers saying, you gave it to me in this other format and it's not readable.
Okay. No, I'll just ignore that.
So, yeah, no.
All right. All right, so thank you for that update. It's going to be fun to kind of have a choice and look at the options and everything.
Yeah,
so.
Some of those kids.
They did a nice job.
I was really impressed with the talent that we see here.
Be great. All right, PAP Facebook page update. Kelsey?
It's moving along. We have 259 people who follow us, which is pretty good. And we're getting like the highest. I posted a meeting today on there, and we had a lot of people like it that were sharing the public meetings, making them more. I mean, I know they come out in the Columbian, but this is just another way to get that info out. It's been a little slow just because it's been the holidays. I posted about the charrette. But there's not a lot. I mean, there's still people going out in the parks every day, but it's not really nice picture-taking weather. I was hoping to get more snow on Christmas Eve for Sorensen, because that park is always full to capacity with sledders, but it didn't happen. So if anyone has ideas or things or sees something in a park, send it to me so I can kind of keep it rolling. But, you know, it's a little bit of our slow time in the winter, so don't have a lot of amazing posts right now to share. So send me ideas. I have a couple I can kind of scramble together. Apparently there's river otters at Salmon Creek right now. Everyone I know who's walked down there is like, have you seen the otters? And so I might go down there and stalk the river otters for a post. We'll see. That's all I got though. So yeah, it's going well though.
So I had a question on that. There's that one entry on it that remains the first entry. Is that the one that you bumped so that even the newer stuff doesn't come first on the timeline?
I don't know.
Which doesn't, you know, make sense because you'd want, like, I went out yesterday to make sure about the notification for our meeting today. And I noticed that same post was still there.
So for me,
the
first post is this meeting.
I wonder why. But we'll check out.
Okay, yeah. So for me, it just shows today's meeting. But, you know, you've known my problems with Facebook and stuff.
Oh, I know. I can't even log on to it now.
Like, you can't even talk to a human. I don't think any humans work at Facebook besides Mark Zuckerberg, who probably doesn't even work there anymore. So, yeah, it's been a little bit of a bumpy start, but I feel like we've kind of hit our footing. But I still have problems with the administrative aspect of it.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth it because I think getting information out is...
Have you downloaded the Page Manager's app?
Yeah, and I just added my personal profile as a manager of the page, so now I've had no problem getting in. But when I just try to log in under our basic like credentials, it's like you're a you're not a real person. You're a robot. You can't access this page. And
I use the page advisor.
Yeah.
The page manager to do all of my stuff on, unless I'm doing a direct post. So,
yeah.
If we're all, how many of you have your smartphones with you today? Raise your hand. I know you have them.
I don't Facebook and I have an account.
Okay. How many of you tagged in here today that you were here?
I did say I was going.
You
I
did, John.
Okay, but tag in that you're here. It helps. Yes. It helps build the brand.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it right now.
That's
now.
Doing, that.
Doing it. Spamming. Spencer, I've got mine.
I'm busy. As the park grows, your personal will drop.
Well, sometimes it's a little stinky. Like I was able to say I was interested in coming, but I didn't have the button there to say going. So there's some little glitches there. But I agree with you, Diana, that we need to Facebook, we need to...
And Bill, could you have Karen send me the list of volunteer of like a fresh batch? Like last fall, she sent me like the next 20 volunteer events coming
sure,
up.
Absolutely.
If she could send me that list again, because when I do sort of have slow moments, that's like a great sort of filler to keep the page going and get people... to volunteer as well in parks. So.
Do you have MLK Day on the volunteer list already?
Yes, okay. I saw it on the back of this, so I will post about that.
Okay, great. Will do.
So, yeah, so looking around, the little arrow on the right side.
Yeah.
And then hit go.
Okay, I'm going to show it to the background. There we go. It's different on my phone than it did on my phone.
I couldn't tell you what it looks like. I'll have to go to the remedial class.
Yeah. I added that back on the agenda. So you want me to describe it?
Go right ahead. Yeah.
So I wanted the youth member update back on the agenda, pretty much just to give Sarah and Mackenzie a chance to check in because they're so quiet at our meetings that I want to give them like a teeny bit of space to share something either about parks or it could be personal. Like, are you a senior, Mackenzie?
Yeah.
So I'm sure you're getting college acceptance letters. I know Sarah is. So, I mean, just kind of a minute or so to kind of, so we can hear your voices. Yeah. So, Mackenzie, why don't you go first?
So I've been doing college applications and I'm finishing up my last two this weekend. So that's what I've been mainly working on my free time. I haven't gotten any acceptances yet. So.
Okay, but working on it. Awesome. Sarah?
Well, I would like to make a point. Okay, I lived almost 18 years of my life, no Facebook, but I got one so I can make sure that I liked the page. That was the sole purpose of getting my Facebook.
Thank you, Sarah.
So
Sarah's
I did
that. The generation who's too cool for Facebook now. So
that just never happened.
Yeah, it's like Instagram now and Twitter is cool for her. So she really threw herself on the sword to be uncool. So thank you, Sarah.
Yeah. So I made sure that I liked and everything. Life stuff. I applied to 4 schools a while back. I haven't heard back from 2 yet. I won't hear for a little while. They make you wait. But I got into the first 2, so that's exciting, and I got presidential scholarships. So
woo-hoo.
Excellent. All right. Thank you.
And what school?
What 2 schools?
Hawaii Pacific University, and then I got into the residential honors program there, and then University of Portland. So.
And what program?
UP. Nursing.
Good Jesuit school.
Hawaii, better weather.
There's no question. Nobody will care 10 years ago from now whether you went to UP or Hawaii.
Yeah.
So go enjoy it.
Tell surfing in Hawaii.
Yeah.
No,
I told my kids permanent record, all the things until you're 60. It doesn't matter.
No.
You know that. Yeah. Like they make you work somewhere in 99%
of the world. Don't forget to have fun. Don't forget to go to a place to enjoy.
All right, thank you guys. I'm going to make you do that next month too, so
cool.
Prepare yourself.
Make you participate.
Yeah.
Great. All right, so we'll move on to Conservation Futures Projects Update.
Nice on Pat here.
Brief update, we're not close to closing on any properties, but work is going on. So I can bring you up to date on kind of the process that we're following. Sort of the first thing out of the chute before Christmas, I sent off all the agreements to the Columbia Land Trust and the cities that we've agreed to provide funding for that
is an agreement that goes through their various city councils and will come before our council as well. That's the legal mechanism that allows us to transfer money from our accounts to their accounts. So far, I've gotten Lacenter's back. It is signed, ready to go. I expect to get the three Columbia Land Trusts on Tuesday. Washougal Greenway has a council consideration of that item on January 22nd. And Camas, probably the earliest they would get to it is February 5th, which would be their next meeting. I don't have a tentative, I don't have a firm date on that, but that's what I'm looking at. In terms of other activity, the Lewis River Ranch project, which will be a county-sponsored project, we have commissioned an access, vehicular access feasibility study. One of the issues that we had when we originally proposed grant funding back in 2016 for that project is that we could not guarantee that there would be vehicular access within 4 years, which is a grant requirement because they have the ongoing gravel mining operation there. So we actually have Mal Foster and Alonghi taking a look at a feasibility study. And they're looking at various access points. One might be joint use of the road with the sand and gravel trucks. One might be sort of an interim coming in from 269, which is the very northern portion of that property. And the other, which is actually kind of the most exciting and probably what we'd like to get to long term, is an undercrossing so we could connect Lewisville Park directly with the Lewis River Ranch property. Now, of course, we're going to have to work through the Department of Transportation on that one, so it might be a longer-term proposition. However, we think there's an argument to be made in terms of traffic safety as well as a strong connection between the parks. So, you know, we should hopefully have that feasibility study done by April, I think. In terms of other things going on, Recreation and Conservation Office, the State Grant Funding Office, has at least come out with a tentative schedule for grants in 2018, which would require grants to be submitted by May 1st. However, it is contingent upon the legislature and governor having a capital budget in place by March 21st. So it's
Did
still-
Did you listen to the Ways and Means Committee last night?
Pardon me?
Yeah, most of us do that.
Yeah, Jennifer, you're the only one who does that.
I did not check and see if that...
They might have one today.
Okay.
They were pretty close last night. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. That's good to know. So I will follow up on that.
We had some Clark County people testifying. It was very impressive. I recognize the name and folks, but it's more around the homeless issue and some other things were relative to the waterfront and the... Pier.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Ways and Means Committee that you can listen in Olympia on their sessions, and they post their sessions on the budget. So those who are waiting on funding, you can keep up tabs if you like.
So what funding are we waiting on to find out about?
Yeah, the entire capital budget's been put on hold since July of last year for the entire state.
Yeah, and that in terms of parks and recreation grants, that would include both addressing kind of those grant projects that made the funding cut in 2017, in addition to looking forward to what money might be available for grants in the coming year. So important, very important to try and help us move these projects forward. The other thing that is going on is the treasurer's office sort of has a working group looking at the bond issuance. We have outside legal counsel and outside financial counsel that are involved. And kind of the first thing to come out of that, we're meeting next week to try and flesh out a tentative schedule for the bond issuance, but at least preliminarily, we're hoping to go to the board of the county council. We're no longer the board of county council. Clark County Council. Clark County Council. Yes. February 27th, and that would be the formal authorization to the treasurer to go and do the bond issuance. Then there is some legwork to be done. Probably the earliest bonds to be sold would be April, and it may have to wait until July because one of the pieces in terms of the financial prospectus that they want to have in hand is an audited financial statement for the county, which might not happen until later in the summer. So that's kind of what's going on. It's, you know, a lot of sort of the administration of the nitty-gritty, how things get done. We're moving forward. And hopefully getting some good reports from CAMAS about getting together with landowners. So things are moving on parallel channels as well. Good. That's
hey,
it.
Pat, I hate to rain on your parade, but Thursday, last night, the Hearings Board just sent us a note that our plan, our comp plan is in non-compliant, which makes us, we'll lose all our grants, so.
If that persists, there is the possibility that, yes, we would not be able to apply for grants. Yes, but
why is our
hoping.
Because it ties it all together. And that's us in the city, so.
But we'll still move ahead and get ready.
So when will that be resolved either way?
I hope it gets resolved in the courts.
Yeah. Sooner than later for our grants.
Yeah.
Yikes.
That could be a few months, though, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obligate everything you can.
Yeah. What's the implication for impact fees?
Impact fees still goes. The only thing is capital budget. We have several million in the capital budget. So we're trying to string that as far as we can because we don't want that to pass and us be non-compliant. So.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. That continues. It means a lot of potential money to the county. So. Hmm. So another obstacle to work through, but hopefully it will run its course and we'll be able to compete successfully for some of these grant applications.
All right. Just another challenge. All right. Appreciate it. All right, so we'll move on to Bratton Canyon. Bill,
okay.
You got an update for that?
Bratton Canyon, so Councilor Bolt, Councilor Olson, and I and our legal staff met at an open house here not too long ago and had like an open forum discussion and allowed a lot of the folks within the room to speak on behalf of their feelings about this project moving forward at Bratton Canyon. And it seemed like we had a unified message that came from the group at large that basically not in my backyard. And I really did not want to see this the Columbia River Veterans Organization to have a footprint on Bratton Canyon.
Hey, so Bill, you're really kind about that meeting.
I am. I know it was brutal.
Okay, I will say this: I was sitting in there like a little fly, completely back against the wall like this, with no delineating markings on me saying who I was. But Bill and Julie and I have to say Mark really dealt with some tough questions and an absolutely hostile audience. And they did it with grace, aplomb, leadership, and statesmanship. And it's never nice to go into a meeting where the room is packed with people who aren't happy. But I think you did a very wonderful job of listening and validating how everybody felt. And for as hostile as it seemed to be, you guys did a really good job. So I just
want
to say that
from
being in that audience.
Yeah, thank you. So it was a very difficult meeting and pretty unified message that came from the crowd. And anybody who spoke differently were kind of picked on immediately. And so that was unfortunate. But at one point, Councilor Bolt reached over and says, I think we just lost the crowd. So we pretty much shut the meeting down. And so the here and after, basically, probably not going to move forward with Bratton Canyon. However, as kind of a moving forward and keeping the thought or the plan moving forward is to allow the Columbia River Veterans Organization to camp at Camp Hope when it's not being utilized for kids. So when it's not being programmed, maybe they can go in there and have some outings there, and just to help fill the gaps in between. And then with a possible approach at looking at Camp Bonneville when it's ready to locate them out there, which it's fitting, definitely. So, and in fact, I believe we're setting up a field trip for them just to go look at Camp Bonneville, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday. So they can just take a look at it and see. I mean, we've got just two sets of barracks out there. Obviously, they need a lot of work to be, you know, habitable, but it is something that, as we're going through our master planning process anyways, we're trying to figure out what we're going to do with those two camps, Camp Kilpak and Camp Bonneville, and we're hoping that we can preserve those facilities and put some use to them. And it's a good way to potentially do that by having, you know, veterans there at that site. So it's not dead, but it is moving forward. And really, our only option for them right now is to allow them, you know, use at Camp Hope when it's not being used for kids. So that's the message going forward.
So we kind of talked briefly about letting them camp at Bratton Canyon, since those were campsites. Is that just completely off the table?
If they want to, I mean, it is a campground already. Uh-huh. You know, the main loop, and it's kind of an RV campground. But it's, you know, if they want to go out there and pitch tents, do that kind of thing, we can permit them to do that.
Okay.
So, but as far as them going off into the eastern 30 acres where they originally wanted, probably not going to happen. So, and not without, you know, the neighbors that were at that meeting coming to hunt us down and take us out.
Yeah.
So, that's it. So, it's hard for us to say no, but sometimes we have to, because it's just, it doesn't work out, you know? So, we've done our level best, you know? They came to us asking us the question, and we did our due diligence, and, you know, sometimes it works out this way, so.
Okay.
Well, I find
Council Bolt, thank you for
disturbing.
What's that?
Maybe it's just on a personal level. I don't know. I said I find it disturbing that 30 neighbors can change. It seemed like when we were out there, it just seemed like a perfect place for them in my mind. And I do think that as a community, as a full community, not just a neighbor,
mm-hmm.
that there is, and maybe it's because I'm from the Vietnam War, and a lot of my friends came back to get spit on, that I really honor the veterans. And I feel like we have a commitment to them. And so that, it bothers me. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah.
I can say, you know, there's an extreme lesson to be learned here on how to do a public process and how not to. Once you start messing up on the public process, you can't go back.
Yeah, I
so,
agree.
So where does a public process go wrong on this, though?
Public process went wrong when they said we need a chain link fence to keep the bad people out.
Yeah.
The bad people were the neighbors.
Yeah.
Once you started that,
yeah.
It was downhill.
And I will say, for being there and listening to all of the folks speak, I can tell you unequivocally, and I'm very passionate about veterans issues. They're very near and dear to my heart. Nobody was denigrating any of the veterans and the idea of serving veterans or helping veterans. So I really want to make that clear. I didn't hear any of that about veterans are bad, they don't want them out there. There was a lot of things that went into their decision and it went into some of their upset. But I, from an outsider standpoint, not one person said, I don't want vets near me. It's a dangerous thing. Now, and it wasn't like that, at least from what I was hearing. So just to kind of assure you,
okay.
Because the first time somebody would denigrate a vet, you know.
I think it'll be easier moving forward with a piece of property that no one has a vested interest yet, that the public isn't already accessing. I think that will make it so much easier of a process, because I can see there, I live right next to a park. If someone came in and said, I'm gonna fence off this area, you can't go in that part anymore. I would be, as a neighbor, a little bit, wait, what? So I get both sides of the coin, for sure. But I think moving forward, getting a piece of property that no one can come and say, hey, that's, we use that for this or that, it's going to be an easier, and it's going to make a more welcoming site for the veterans, too, to not feel like when they're going there, there's angry neighbors stewing around the chain link fence looking at them. So like a more welcoming spot anyway. So I think Camp Bonneville is a great idea. But I think we should definitely try to get them as much access to Camp Hope in the meantime as we can. And what was the other property, the Optimist Club? Did we talk about that?
Or not really. And no. That's Pat just left too. And that's a site that's just upstream of Louisville Park. And it is actually somewhat of a campground. I haven't been there, Pat has. And I don't know if that was, and I'm not sure what kind of usage it's getting.
Okay.
That's where Pat would come into play. He just left. But that was a possibility. I wasn't sure if we should actually even introduce it or not, not knowing what kind of pushback we're going to get with that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the long run, I think, and if that organization's willing to wait a little while, you know, to potentially put them out of Camp Bonneville at one of the two existing camps, it's not a bad idea, you know.
No,
at least we're not telling them, hey, it's not going to happen on the, you know, on behalf of the county.
Yeah.
So we're giving them some hope. So, thank you, Councilor Bolt, for handling it the way you did. You did a good job. So, thank you.
Go ahead.
Drones and parks.
Drones, parks.
So, we've been threatening to try to bring a guest speaker in to talk about the use of drones in parks, and it's a whole different new dynamic where we've got these remote controlled aircraft that everybody has been getting, and you know, from kids for Christmas to that have probably very limited expertise in how to operate those, to these folks who have gotten their USAS licenses, which is a limited FAA license, I believe, that they can go out and utilize them professionally. And so we are contending with drones in our parks, and how do we deal with that? And so what I was hoping to do was to get a speaker here to really talk about drones and privacy issues. And there is a meeting coming up next, it's a brown bag up in the counselor's training room on the sixth floor next week. And I believe it's for staff, but I was kind of hoping that if I was going to attend that, and if I like what I see, I wouldn't mind bringing that particular speaker over to our next PAB meeting and really talking about it. But the one thing that we really want to focus on with regard to drones is being used in parks is privacy. I know parks are a public place, but each one of these drones, typically all of them, have got cameras on them, and we don't necessarily want them flying over our beaches when people are trying to sunbathe, or to harass our wildlife in our parks. That's another big consideration. Or just the danger of drones swooping down and hitting people. Yeah. You know, we don't know what level of expertise these people have as piloting a drone. And so, and then there's another thing is if a drone gets stuck in a tree 150 feet up, are they gonna ask us to go try to rescue that drone? You know, we have the staff time and ability to do that.
No.
So there's a lot of different, you know, areas there that we have to take a look at. Now, our county policy, or not county policy, county code 9.05, under personal conduct, it says there's no airplanes or remote-controlled airplanes, remote-controlled boats, or rockets, you know, allowed without special permission. Well, drones don't qualify as airplanes. They are aircraft. So by the letter of the law, it doesn't apply to them. So we have to take a look at our county code and say, okay, if we're going to open up county code to change this little wording, should we take a look at the rest of the code? And that's where I'd like to talk, you know, PAB is going to have to be engaged with taking a look at our entire county code. If we're going to open it up, we might as well make the changes that we need to make. So, Amanda?
Just to let you know, Bill, part of what the prosecutor's office is being tasked with and has been tasked with for quite some time is updating the code in general, especially since the charter was created.
Yes.
There are terms of the code that are antiquated now because they don't apply because of the charter. And so, obviously, since I represent parks, that was going to be one of the chapters that I take a look at anyway. And
right.
So, whatever the result is that's kind of already on the radar as far as things that need to be dealt with. So.
Okay. So that's something that we'll probably address in this year, in fact. Probably start working on it next month.
So I am interested in this. I've never thought anything about that. I've seen the no model airplanes or whatever it is in the code. But I've been spending time out at Willow Grove Park in Cowlitz, I guess it is.
Okay.
The boat ramp there. And you're I've been there every weekend for 6 weeks now. And I mean, the parking lot, besides maybe four trailers, is empty. And it's a big parking lot. And there's people there every weekend, both Saturday, Sunday. Different groups too, not the same people, because I've talked to them. Flying airplanes, drones, all kinds of stuff. And I was thinking about this. If they weren't there, you're talking about a large amount of area that's not being used at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of did make me think about how we have the rules. And I get the privacy aspect and stuff, but at the same time, I don't know that it's bad to have an area that is designated.
Right.
The end of Frenchman's Bar, when you go down to those shelters way down on the end where, I mean, besides whoever's using the shelter, there's not a whole lot going down there a lot of times. Maybe fishermen. It's a long walk.
But on the flip side, you've got wildlife and migrating birds down there, like, you know, so yeah. The farther you get away from people, the more you get into wildlife, and wildlife's freaked out by the drones. So it's one of those things where it seems like a catch-22 no matter where you do it.
Yeah, and I prefer the parking lots, honestly.
Yeah, I've
got a flying group that's asking me right now if there's a place that, or 20 acres that we can supply them, you know, with parking to fly their airplanes, you know, so they've got a combination of your typical radio remote control airplanes to drones to just about everything. And so, you know, if we can try to find a spot and that's a good fit, absolutely, you know, because it does say that the county director can provide them permission to operate these equipment, you know, but it's controlled. We give them a permit and say, you're going to be at this place at this time doing this. And so that's what we want, ultimately.
Jennifer, does the schools allow drones on school property?
We haven't specifically addressed it.
So technically people can still go, like, behind Phyllida and fly a drone?
They do.
Okay.
Well, I know my grandson got one for Christmas. This is a young grandson. Not very adept at flying it yet. But there's about four little guys in our neighborhood that all got them for Christmas. And they've already created a little club right there.
Mm-hmm.
And they got those up and down. No worry about them. They barely figure out how to go up and down, let alone take a picture. But yeah, they're becoming very popular. So we need to get ahead of the game on this.
We need to do is issue permits to people who will go out and do a drone flyover our Lewis and Clark Trail project so I can have the drone footage. And then
that's what I wanted to do with that one guy who kept promising to come back and speak. I wanted to say, okay, convince me why drones are so great. Go do this.
Well, that was my character. So
yeah, film the Lewis and Clark Trail and then give me the footage and then we'll take it to a meeting.
Yeah.
This is an age-old argument with recreation. There's always emerging technologies coming out there.
Yeah.
And part of our mission, I think, as recreation professionals is to provide those recreations that the public needs. Maybe not what we want, or maybe not in the best interest of everybody. But there is a user group out there who likes this activity and wants to participate. So I would hope that as we enter into this, we would go into that with kind of a frame mind as well, is that, you know, here's an opportunity. Here's like an equestrian group, you know, or a horseshoe group. Maybe not a large group of the population, but still a large interest in this. And we suffered this with the Corps of Engineers, too, when I was working for them. We suffered the same problem. We were concerned about security for infrastructures is what our big thing that we had our hand on. But we did it in such a manner where that the local manager or the local resource officer or perhaps yourself or something could periodically permit these things for whatever special use they want to. These things do races with them, you know, they fly obstacle courses with them. It's a form of recreation that I think we have to be careful to make sure that we don't discount just because it's not necessarily super user friendly. That's just my two cents worth.
Legally speaking, if someone's injured by a drone in a county park and we change our code to allow that, are we liable for that?
We'd be liable for anything.
Yeah, right? Pretty much. I mean,
it's in
the pockets.
When I did the research on this, like Seattle, Portland, no one allows drones in their park. It's against everyone's county code.
It just happens anyway.
It does.
Just because we're not a Frenchman's Bar. You know, it's happened.
It's happened in all of our parks. Yeah. It's just it's not sanctioned by us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
I think the issue is, you know, you've got groups, and when you have a group, they're organized, and giving them a permit,
yes.
There's some responsibilities
established. Mm-hmm. You have the single user out there monkeying around trying, and you know, yep, those are the ones that you can't find easily. I mean, you know, right. and if something happens, they're gone. I mean, you know, you won't. But if it's a group, then there's somebody to contact. Especially if you have a permit, so.
Well, we know it's not going away, so I mean, it's always going to be here.
No,
so
it's
we need to adapt, obviously, and try to figure out where the fit's going to be. We did permit a group to have a flying or a race on our beach at Vancouver Lake over the water. You know, it was a one-day event. It was fun, you know. So, yeah, we're not saying no to everybody. It just has to make sense, so we need to know about it. So we can.
Well, some of these folks, I mean, I used to fly model airplanes and remote control RC planes, and you know, you got a little bit of investment in that, and so you try to develop the skill and everything else. But again, it's when the kids, you know, we open the park up to everybody, and kids have something, and they get, you know, something up in the air, and then they, whatever goes up has to come down eventually.
Right.
So unfortunately, it's whether it's controlled or not. So,
that being said, the county's probably going to have their own drone program coming up, you know.
And I have to.
And for maintenance aspects, you know, to do LIDAR checks on bridges and infrastructure for the forestry program. There's a lot of uses there that it makes a lot of good sense. And so the drones are actually a very, very good tool. And so it comes in very handy. And so, like the flyover for the Lewis and Clark Trail.
Marketing
absolutely.
Is huge. Think of the gas it'll save.
Yes.
Well, the areas you can access. I mean, that's the nicest thing about a drone is it can get places where you can't and capture things you can't.
I don't want it in regional parks without a permit.
Correct.
I just feel like there's too much wildlife in those parks. I mean, like the Salmon Creek Trail, I saw someone harassing egrets with a drone, like getting right up in their face. And I don't know, that stresses me out. Like, I just don't feel like people.
And to be fair, that is against the law.
True.
Harassment of wildlife is,
Yeah.
So,
but just because we don't have them operating the drone in our park doesn't mean the drone can't fly over our park because it's being operated someplace else.
True.
So the restrictions or the guidelines we put on, we have to think about all the ways around it as well.
Yeah.
And then the enforcement as well too, because I hate to put any kind of a rule on the board that can't be enforced.
How can you enforce it? Who's going to enforce it?
Right.
Well, it's like when people bring their dogs to the park without leashes. That's on the board.
Guilty.
Sometimes I will say, hey, the sign says if their dog's like knocking my kids down. I'll be like, you know, it does help to have it on the board though. So you can point to
you
it and say if you feel it's aggressive or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kind of like alcohol bans.
What?
Kind of like alcohol bans. Mm-hmm. Alcohol's banned. But unless it's a problem, it's not really being enforced.
Correct. Right. Yeah. Last time I was at Frenchman's Bar, someone had a 24-pack of Bud. It's like, you're not going to hide it? Like, come on.
What did you think of?
I want to be like, I'm on the parks board. You're breaking the law. Oh, I'm confiscating this beer.
Yeah. See how far you get with that. Yeah, that's a good idea.
You know who I am.
All right. Let's go to new business. Parks Foundation dormant account policy.
Okay.
Bill and Diane.
Yeah, I can start real quickly. So recently, back in December, Diana reminded us that there was a policy that was implemented, was it the year before, about dormant accounts. And so these are special accounts that we asked to be set up for special purposes, you know, for specific to parks or specific to projects. And there's monies in these accounts, and they've been there. Some of these accounts have been on the books for many, many years, in fact. And so the policy, and I'll let Diana explain this in more depth, but the policy in place is that the intent of these accounts is for these accounts to be utilized, and for whatever it is that these monies are being collected for to be utilized for that purpose. But in a lot of cases, some of these accounts, the monies have been sitting there for quite a long time. And no monies have been spent. So the policy addresses that with a kind of a fee that gets charged to these accounts if they're sitting dormant at a rate of, say, 5% based on the value of the account itself. And so I came to the realization that this was a reality in that these accounts would start getting charged. And so we started taking a look at all of our special accounts and saying, okay, how do we make these things active so that we are not losing the 5%? And the 5% that comes out is it's being redistributed back into, correct me if I'm wrong, into community grants.
And I want to be real clear. This is not a punitive measure. I'm not in this, I've got dormant fees. I'm going to stick it to the man. It's not the way it is, guys. What we looked at is the Parks Foundation runs 71 special projects throughout this community. And they're taxing, and they go year after year, and we keep the accounting and the books on all these. So what we want to do is, if money's being raised for something, let's use that money. And the first year, we remind you there's going to be a dormant fee of 5% that will be assessed. At the end of year two, we send you a letter saying that you have a dormant fee and this account's been dormant for the past 2 years. And year three, I come to you and say, you're still dormant. What we do at the end of year three, the funds will be moved to the community grant program. Not a community grant program. I don't steal county money and give it to Washougal. I don't take CAMF money and give it to the city of Vancouver. That money from those dormancy fees go back into a community grant for Clark County. That would be a Clark County request. So you're recycling your money and you're using your money. It's not coming to me. It makes it better for us to get this money used. And what I did with Bill, we sat down, I sent him the dormant fees, we sat down with Karen Llewellyn, and we were able to come up with ways to make those funds not dormant any longer and to get some action on them. And we came up with some creative ways. The Bragg Crawford Park. The park's not being built right now, but we can get some playground equipment for what's there. So making smart usage of the funds that are there and having a conversation and an intent. So I really want to be clear that this is not punitive in any way. It's to remind you that your money is there and we want you to use it. So that's the dormant fee. The other part of that is admin fees. Because we have 71 special projects we manage, we're assessing a dormant, besides the dormant fee, a special projects fee. And you can see the rates on there. We assess that once a year. And this goes back into the Parks Foundation for managing these special accounts. We used to take it right off the top of membership, but now it's two separate things. You have your membership, and then next year, in the 2018, not 17, you'll have your administrative fees that we will be assessing.
Now I have a question for you. Have you thought through the implications of that with other foundations?
Absolutely.
Giving you funds and not wanting to pay your administrative fee?
What do you mean other foundations giving? These are municipalities that we're working with.
Okay.
And people that hold a special project.
So so you don't receive money from another foundation that gives you funds that you would charge a fee to that foundation for the process of the funds?
If a foundation gives us money, it's usually tied to a municipality's project.
Okay.
So my issue with this is, so say Flight and Neighborhood Association saving to put a statue in a neighborhood park,
mm-hmm.
and the statue costs $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to penalize them. I know you don't like that word, but that's how I feel it is.
Cost of doing business. How much does it cost to employ you?
Let me finish. So they're trying to raise $30,000 for this statue.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to not have the penalty assessed, or the 5% dormancy fee,
you're talking two separate issues.
But you're saying they have to have
special
their account.
Special projects fee.
Okay.
Two separate things.
Okay, but money is being taken away from them if they don't use their account every year, if they have a long-term fundraising goal. So the $300,000 you envisioned for the Lewis and Clark project, if that takes 5 years to raise, money is going to be taken from that account and put into the general grant pot.
Can I?
Correct.
No.
Then tell me why that's not correct.
Okay, number one, you're talking two separate policies.
A dormant fee is different than an administrative fee.
Okay, well, the dormant fee. We're not using the... It's going to take us forever to raise $300,000.
Define dormant, I think, might be an important
thing. Okay, thank you. Dormant fee, what we're looking at is if there's no movement on the account at all. At all.
Does that mean plus or minus?
So
plus,
as long as someone's putting something in each year, it's not dormant,
putting
right?
something in and spending money on it.
But what if we don't want to spend money because we're saving the money for the bigger project? That's my question.
If we know that something's going on, that money is going to be targeted for something that it's not... Melania, you seem very upset. I can see you back there. So.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, I want to hear what you have to say on this, like with Brad Crawford.
With Brad Crawford, we had established that back in 1985. We had fundraisers who put the money into the account. The foundation newsletter said Atlanta Neighborhood Association had established the account, donated to that account. Then all of a sudden, they took the Atlanta Neighborhood Association off the account, so we're not getting any notices. We did not get a notice about the dormant account fee. My daughter, myself, the Atlanta Neighborhood Association are putting in money every year, and we did donate in December, which does not reflect on this. But we still would have to pay about $2,000 or so of that fundraised amount would have had to go for dormancy fees. When we signed up, there was no such thing. All that money was raised prior to dormancy fees going into effect, for one thing. But then also, any of our contributions right now are being charged 5%. For administrative fee to just donate into the account. So, but because we were the instigator of the project, we were the ones that fundraised, we were the ones that put the money into the account. Then they told us, you cannot spend any money until you go out there, pay for it, then come back to us, and we will decide whether or not you are eligible to be reimbursed. That's the fact of fundraising twice. And I know it wasn't under your domain. I know it was back in 1985 and 1990 and so on. But in the meantime, also when we established the account, we were part of the City of Vancouver County Parks structure. So then we have all these directors that are changing. We have the policies that are changing. And then they go, well, we cannot do anything now, and you cannot start anything now, because it depends on a new director coming in. So, because we did do away with the policy where we had to fundraise twice. Not only once to put it into the account, but second time to pay for something, and then come back to the account asking for reimbursement. Then the committee would decide whether or not we were qualified to get the reimbursement. And of course, that also happened to us with the Philida Community Park, where $5,000 went to the City of Vancouver, but it was on the grant. So there was quite a lengthy discussion between stakeholders, as well as the county and the city. So this has been going on for a long time. And now the bottom line is that if we didn't decide to do something now, the dormancy fees would apply. So we would lose that $2,000, which would take away from the amenities that was raised, that the money was fundraised for. And number two, if we didn't do anything now, and we still have some money coming in, we still have to pay that 5%, or it's 5% would come off. Donations. So we would be hit with, because also the Parks Foundation did not advertise that particular account after the initial advertising. They did not notify us about the policy changes because they took us off the account. Even though we're the ones that started the account.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right here because I appreciate the history and I cannot speak to what Phyllis, Sherry, Temple did.
I know, but the bottom line is we would have to pay $2,000, or $2,000 would have to come out of the account.
Nobody charged you a dormancy fee. That's what I'm trying to explain to everybody, is before we get to the dormancy fee, we make the community and the municipality that hold dominion over that park aware of it, so we can work with folks to avoid that. A dormancy fee, the only reason we'll charge it is if something stays stagnant and nobody does anything with it. There's a skate park that we can't do anything with at Frenchman's Bar. Right now I'm trying to get the money moved over to a golf course, not a disc golf course at Frenchman's Bar. They can't permit it, they can't do something with it, so can I get the money moved over to a project in Hawkinson? It's not about taking the money, it's making good use of the money.
So that skate park, that's gonna go dormant or whatever. So if I give you a dollar, then it doesn't go dormant.
If you spend something out of it,
what about it's, in though? Yeah. The out's not, I don't, the out I understand, but the in. If I donate a dollar to that fund.
No, that's not how it works. It's using those funds.
So yeah, it's,
we have to
save
like,
the dollar. Like doesn't want to buy a $2,000 brick. She wants to save that $2,000 to go to her bigger project. And so that's the problem I have with it, is she has a vision in mind of what she wants to, like her organization wants to use that money for. And in order to avoid the dormancy fee, she has to spend $2,000 on something that takes away from her overall funding.
Yeah, because that counts for the memorial arches that cost way over $25,000. There's $25,000 in the account. Yes, we would have to spend all that money at once, but we don't have quite enough.
Nobody's asking you to spend all. Help me, Bill.
So, yeah. So, no, we're not here to pick on Diana on this one, but we just need to be aware that the policy now does include dormancy fees, so we have to figure out what to do to keep those accounts active, whether we're, I don't know if it's as simple as just saying, Diana, we've got this big project in mind down the road. It's going to cost $30,000. We've got $12,000 saved up. Can we keep this active? What do we need to do to keep it active and not have money coming out of it?
And one of the things we can do is an MOU, Memo of Understanding. Mm-hmm. So we know that your fundraising for the waterfront park is a great example. They've been raising money for that. There's a memo of understanding how that works, and when the money's coming in and when the money's going out. So there's ways that we can work with organizations to put that in there. If you have a Lewis and Clark Trail project, if we open up a special account for Lewis and Clark Trail project and we're raising money, and say I get $10,000 in grant my first year, well, I know you're not gonna be building the Lewis and Clark Trail project. I took in a $600,000 grant from Murdoch 2 years ago. We didn't assess that a dormancy fee because the project's not complete yet, and that's in the memo of understanding with the City of Vancouver. So if I know Lewis and Clark Trail is not going to be built for 10 years, that'll be in the memo of understanding that we're raising those funds. There would be an admin fee on that account. Admin fees are going to be on all of our accounts, because it takes so much to fiscally manage each and every account, each and every month, the reconciliation, the taxes we have to, our filing of our taxes. It's a lot to manage those accounts, which is why we tried to look at it as parsimoniously as we could with our admin fees. And projects with $1 million or more, we go into a separate negotiation on what fees are. Pledge donations will be assessed a fee according to the pledge amount. If the pledge arrives in installments, fees will be withdrawn from each installment. And if a donation or more is made of a $10,000 pass-through, one time in and one time out, we're just going to do $250 on the admin on that. And I know it's frustrating. When the board went over it, we are trying to recoup the cost of our doing business and the cost of maintaining 71 special projects throughout banks, throughout this community, and reconciling those each and every month. That's where the admin fees come in. And we take those right off the top when we have been of membership fees. So if a municipality pays $250 for membership, we took the admin fees right off of that number. So like the county, it goes from our in-kind. From the city, it goes from our in-kind. If it's a municipality like Camas or Washougal, we were deducting it off of that. So there was no money trading hands, if that makes sense.
I've got two questions for
sure.
You. The memo of understanding, you had said money coming in, money going out when you were explaining the city of Vancouver. Does it have to have money going out though? Or could it just be money coming in so it's active?
So it's active. But the dollar donation that you said just to keep it going, I can go back and clarify that, but I don't think that was...
I think it has to be $500.
$500 going into the account, and that keeps it from a dormant fee.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
Per year.
There's something there.
I think it's per year. I can clarify that.
I'm just curious how that worked. And then Milana had mentioned them paying it up front to actually install it and then asking for the reimbursement. Is that the way it works, or how...
When we do a special project with anybody, we give them the special project policy, what we can pay and what we can't pay. And there's some very specific things that we can cover and what we can pay for out of grant money, out of special projects, and there are very specific things we cannot cover. So when we enter into a new agreement, and I didn't enter into the agreement back in 1985 with you folks, I was not even of age then, I don't know what was in that, what that agreement entailed. But from now on, what I send out to everybody is when you apply for these things, you have to have a couple of things. You have to be able to have a municipality's permission or sponsorship on that. And I will hand this out to everybody.
So we have an agreement to buy a statue. Do I have to put the money up front to buy the statue, or do I show you the statue we're buying and then the funds are distributed from you to buy
okay,
the statue?
Okay, Washougal did a statue, the dog.
Yep.
They raised money for Forever Faithful. They entered into a special project with us. It was very clear to them what they could raise money for, what we could pay money for, what invoices we could cover, what we couldn't.
Sure.
We took in money for Forever Faithful up to $10,000 through multiple fundraisers. When they bought the statue, the person who did the statue, the bronze, sent us the invoice. We paid the invoice. When they required their first upfront deposit to secure that, we paid for that.
That's all
so all of those invoices just go through to us, and we pay them as long as they're approved by whatever municipality holds it. I can't pay anything without Bill's papal blessing.
Okay.
So
it's kind of the sunk costs that aren't eligible for that.
Right.
And that's why you clarified this is what we can pay and what we can't.
Right. And that's why in the special projects, when you sign that, you sign that you know that everything, that each, how all of it works and how it lives, and you have to be a member, and that you have to have the administrative fees and in-kind trade and things we can't pay for, things we can pay for, funding, distribution, and reimbursement, exclusions. There's a whole policy that you have to sign and acknowledge that you are agreeable to, including closures of dormant accounts. We just can't arbitrarily go, oh, this is closed. We have to work with everybody on how it closed, how the money moves, all of that. So my best thing I can say is I want to work with you. If you come to me, how many dormant fees did you pay this year, Bill? How much did you pay in dormant fees?
None so far.
And he won't have to. Because we sat down and we looked at the dormant accounts and we found ways that he could actually use those funds.
But I guess that's where you and I are going to fundamentally disagree. The ways are, in my opinion, wasting money from that account to avoid paying the dormancy fee when that's not the eyes on the prize. And I think we're going to fundamentally disagree on that. But for me, that's taking away from what your goal was, these arches. You're taking $2,000 away from the arches to do something else to satisfy the dormancy fee. And that's where...
Where are we at with these arches? I guess...
I'm just using this as just like a concrete example. But the fact that we're going to have to draw money out of these accounts to satisfy this so we don't have the dormancy fee takes away from the greater project.
Here's another question that goes hand in hand with that. Is that with all of this understanding, and I totally support the idea that yeah, you've got to cover your costs. But when we are dealing with organizations that are in and of themselves a 501c3, I think maybe that's where Milana's frustration comes in, is that her own organization has this tax advantage that they offer to people for donations, and yet why are we requiring that she run it through the Parks Foundation that then has these other restrictions and leaves her out of control of those monies that she's raised?
Milani is always welcome, like any organization, to take her money out of the Parks Foundation and run her 501c3 the way she wants to. I mean, everybody has a choice.
Yeah, yeah, I get that, but I'm just going back to our organization and saying this has been a requirement for her, that her 501c3 can't make that direct interaction with us, and I'm wondering why.
I don't think that there's an exclusionary clause or anything like that they can't do that. I mean,
that's what we were told, that we would have to establish a foundation account. And then actually when we spoke about the children's celebration area in the community park, you know, the question came up whether or not we can use that 501c3 for our domain. Of course, we've been afraid to do that yet because of the experiences with everything else, because we were told that we have to go to the foundation.
Again, Milani, this is the first time I've talked to you about anything in the year I've been there. So I'm willing to work with you and help you out however I can. My job is not to be punitive. But this stuff came down from my board, from my finance. And that's why I'm presenting it to you guys. And when I met with each and every municipality, I made it clear right up front, I don't want your money. I don't want to take money from you. I don't want to penalize you. I don't want to take away from your vision or goal. Help me help you.
And I appreciate that approach. The problem is that because somebody took the Light and Neighbor Association off of that account, we don't get any notification about changes in policies, or that it was dormant. I'm dormant, so when Bill and I spoke, there was going to be almost like $2,000 assessed. So, I'm glad it was worked out amicably, and I'm glad that Bill had made the time to speak about this with you and with me. But the bottom line is that we were not notified. We're not on the account. Actually, you had corrected me here in the public hearing, and you showed me the list that it said that Kaleida was not on the account, but it's on the direct profit card. And that's when I started questioning that. Because we were the ones that established the account, but for some reason, our name had disappeared. So, ergo, we have not been notified about changes, nor have we been notified about anything else. And I know you have a business, basically, that you need to have best management practices for. I understand that. But then also, the board wants me to tell you that if the foundation is the one that's fundraising, we have no problem with MJ advocates. However, when it's the community that spends its own assets, fundraise, put it in, propose, spend our own time, and then we're being successful. That, to us, is a little bit discouraging to the community that came out of the project.
It sounds like the one thing that's been missing here is direct communication. And that maybe needs to be taken care of offline. We kind of come together.
So basically, it was for me, it was a kind of a wake-up call because I wasn't paying attention to the policy, which was actually created a year ago. And so,
yeah, it came in before I was even
yeah,
here.
Yeah, it was. It was, and so.
I thank you for working with us.
Right, and so you know, give credit to Diana because she notified me of this policy and brought it to my attention. I thought, oh boy! So the lights went on and said, hey, we need to take a look at all these accounts. Some of these accounts have been sitting there for many years and with no action on them, And so, as a sponsor of the account, I just need to make sure that we are doing something with them to keep them active. And even if we have to do like an MOU, we can certainly do that. So, you know, like Diana said, it's not a punitive effort, but I do realize the fundamental value of kids that have put $5 to account or $10 years ago for a specific purpose.
And we want to honor that.
Yeah.
And I've heard words like penalties and you're going to take this and all kinds of verbiage today. And I want to make really clear
if you've taken anything out of this today, we don't want to penalize, we don't want to be punitive, and we want to be good stewards of the intention of the money you have. But again, I'll go back to this disc golf course at Frenchman's Bar. They couldn't get it permitted, they couldn't get it off the ground, it interfered with wildlife. And Karen Llewellyn came to me and said, Diana, I've got this money sitting here, we can't do anything with it. Would you reach out to the donor and see if we could put it to the disc golf at Hawkinson? Which makes sense, rather than just letting money sit there that's not going to go on something that wouldn't be permitted, we were able to make that donor call and get it plugged in to where it needs to be. We did the same thing with the Langsdorf account, which was that county or was that?
It's it was county. It's for the bench, for the Vancouver Lake Trust.
We had extra money in a dormant account from the Langsdorf account that just sat there for years. I was able to call part of the Langsdorf family and get that money moved over to something that these guys can actually put to use and build a bench and do the things that they need to do in that park. That's how I want to work with you. I don't want to take. I want to try to give and be a good steward. But my board, who I'm beholden to, who I didn't create this, my board did in the best interest of our organization. So.
And we're lucky that you come to us and are trying to teach us
and
how
work
to follow
with you.
The rules and leverage what we've got.
And
there.
Work with you. Not at any point did I look at Bill and go, yep, sorry, money's off the table. When's my check? It was, let's look at these line by line and see what we can do. Because I don't want that money going away either. I know how hard it is to raise money. And I know how hard it is to go back to donors and say, I'm sorry, this went to fees. You know?
I would be one of those donors too.
Well, anybody. So I hope that makes sense, guys. And we'll work with you every step of the way.
You're in a tough spot.
I am.
I got to say, we've had, and the reason why I asked my question earlier is I have another foundation wanting to provide money for something, and I'm asking a foundation to hold that money. So I've got some jockeying of some funds in order to be able to spend it all as one component. And when I had that donor want to put his money here and they wanted to charge a 6% administrative fee for all of the process that was happening, this donor pulled out.
We don't want donors to go, God, they're so fee heavy. You hear about charities and organizations all the time where 10% gets where it hits the pavement and 90% goes to admin fees and marketing.
Yeah.
We're not about that. There is a hard cost of doing business, guys. That banking is cumbersome, and we're held accountable to it, to the feds and everybody else. So that's where the admin fees came in.
And I want to say that I really appreciate how open the Parks Foundation has. Any of you gone in on their website to make a donation on their website? And they just are right up front saying, there's a cost to this transaction, and we can either pay for it, or maybe you want to kick those extra couple of bucks in. So they're real upfront about what the costs are.
Where does the interest go that these accounts accrue? Does it go, like, if there's $100,000 in an account for the Lewis and Clark Trail, does the interest that account accrue go back, add to that account, or does it go to a general?
The interest goes to a general, like, general fund.
Okay.
So interest that we make on managing that money. We don't invest the money. A lot of nonprofits take that money. We have a lot of special projects money. They will take that money and invest it in something else to try to make money on that piece of money that's in there. Does that make sense?
But it can be used for like administrative costs as well.
It goes into our general fund, yeah.
Okay.
But the accounts that have that kind of last year, I'll be honest, our financials are public record. We made $2,000 in interest last year off of the 71 accounts we have.
Yeah, and I have no problem with the administrative fees at all. I just don't like the dormancy fees. And that's just kind of where I'll leave my piece.
And that's the most avoidable fee.
But by spending stuff on stuff you don't want.
No.
Yes.
Or communication. She said communication.
But
no,
communication. For new contracts, though. For new ones.
$500
in or out.
Not for
any activity. John just surmised it. Any activity of $500 in or out keep you from being.
But you just you told Dave it's not in.
No.
He said a dollar.
$1.
$500. That says it's going to sit there for a lot.
Okay. Well, let's. I would encourage.
I mean, we can agree to disagree, which I think we're going to, and you don't.
I think we have, and we'll leave it at that.
Thank you.
I think Diana has offered to talk offline, and I would encourage everybody that if you do have a specific question or opportunity to call Diana, talk to her. She's been more than open, and we'll go forward from there.
Thank you, guys.
No, the Parks Foundation is a wonderful program, and so we just, you know, if the rules to live by, and we'll do that. And so,
and
I appreciate your openness about everything, Diana.
Please just remember, I'm not your enemy. I'm not
here to
take money off the backs of poor, helpless children collecting $5 at a time for a park.
Well, and please don't make me that bad guy in this scenario, because I feel like that's what people are doing.
No.
I mean, I just have a different opinion on it.
No.
I'm not the bad person accusing you of being the bad person. I'm just saying, it's just not a policy that I love. So,
it's not a policy.
It's not a popular policy.
It's not a popular policy, and unfortunately, my job is to announce the policy, but my job is also to find ways, and this sounds terrible, here comes my healthcare background, find ways around it to keep money in the pot and not be punitive. So I think if we all work together, we will make sure that none of that money dissipates. Kelsey, and I know you're not pointing any fingers.
Yeah.
You come from the same background I do, so we just all want to keep as much out on the streets as we can and keep as much money going to these wonderful things we're doing as we can. And
yeah.
I will work with you every step of the way on that.
And I just don't want the integrity of an intended project to be compromised to circumvent these fees, I guess is my biggest concern.
And I hear you, and that's why I'm here to work with each and every one of you to try to avoid those things at all costs, because that's not what I'm about.
Okay. Let's move on. I think you have established that.
Thank you.
You're more than willing to work. All of us are. All right, so manager's report. Bill.
I'll get these passed out here real quickly. So just real briefly, on January 10th, the Clark County Council approved the Parks Advisory Board reappointments for Kevin Path, Kelly Putney, and John Spencer. So thank you guys for re-upping and agreeing to stay with us, and really appreciate your service and your expertise, and all of you, my entire Parks Advisory Board is highly valued, so thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us. We talked about this earlier, but the Wayne Berry property on 149th and Northwest 11th got closed on January 2nd, and that was by choice of the property seller for tax purposes. We own that 9 acres now, and it's all ours, so Jeremy's gonna take steps to get that developed. Are actually developed to do a level one cleanup, which means fencing, taking the house down, cleaning up the property, and turn it into a green space until we get a chance to develop it into a full-blown neighborhood park. So that's the one piece of property that we actually jointly purchased with Clean Water. So we've got the highly usable piece up on top, and they've got this canyon property that goes down to Wilbur Creek and back up the other side. So they want to use that for projects, probably mitigation, different types of things. And so that was actually a very good partnership. The reason I wanted to go into that partnership is so I didn't have to pay as much road frontage improvement when it comes time to develop it. So that was good. Speaking of Parks Foundation, Karen Lewald is submitting 2 grants to the Parks Foundation. And that is the Lacamas Park Trails Wayfinding and the Vista Meadows Playground Update. So the Vista Meadows Playground upgrade, that playground, for lack of a better word, sucks. It's pretty small. It doesn't really serve a lot of kids very well. So we really want to upgrade that playground. And so we're going to actively go after a grant to see if we can do that. Much like we did with Stockford Village, which was a huge improvement to that park. It breathed new life into it. This year, nonprofits are allowed to go after grants to the Parks Foundation. So, Dog Paw, I know, is going to go after a grant for site improvements for two of their off-leash areas here in the county. So that's Dakota and Kane Memorial off-leash areas. And then Camp Hope is going to go after a second year grant for their summer youth scholarship program, which was very successful this last year. So I was really happy to see that was successful, and I hope they get it again. So that's really cool. Next one, the Intertwine. I know a lot of you are familiar with the Intertwine, have gone to some of their meetings. And so Mike Wetter, he's the executive director, and he's going to be stepping down. And so Dave Cohen, he's the one that we've actually been dealing with directly, you know, our projects like the Lewis and Clark Trail. He will be stepping up into the executive director spot as an interim until he gets replaced. But Dave will be helping us through the process, the Lewis and Clark process in the transition period. Pat is working on the second and possibly the final phase of the Erickson Warner property swap. And so, Jeremy, I think I put that up on our map just to refresh everybody. That's the piece that we're going to end up with along Vancouver Lake.
It's the Erickson property trade. I put it onto this folder right before I came in. Go into the.
What's that? Sweaty hands.
It's just here.
That's so weird. We're the beneficiaries, so we're not doing all the service.
Yeah, go to Erickson. Okay.
So last year, we started working with Andy Warner, and it was a planned use development on this piece right here. So this planned use development right here had this property in ownership. So the first phase was for them to deed this property over to us, this entire 7 acres right here. And then in exchange for deeding a portion of that property back, this little northern piece right here, they're going to give us this piece right here. So this is the part that we're working on right now. So we started off with no land at all, and then we ended up with two parcels, this piece right here and this piece. And so we, for the most part, we own this up here. We have a piece here yet to acquire and another piece down a little bit farther. But that'll complete our loop around Vancouver Lake. And so once we do that, then we can take a hard look at making that trail loop connection. And so it's actually a very good trade for us. We are really trying to do our best to acquire as much shoreline as possible on the site. So that's what
Bill, is the west side of that parcel just the high water mark? Is that why it looks sort of funny not going up to the shore?
Yeah, right here.
Yeah.
So this is Eagle Island right here. This is actually from the dredge spoils. Yeah, this is just, you're talking about right here?
No, I'm talking about the line, the property line that you've got. Does the property line just go to the high water mark or something?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. In fact, we're having a difficult time with survey because the acreage is a different size than what it shows. And this property was actually, there's actually dredge spoils that were blown onto this property, so we're trying to figure that out because it didn't change the acreage size. But the basic point of the matter is that we really do want to try to acquire as much shoreline around Vancouver Lake as possible so we can achieve our goals with trail. So.
Nice. Good deal.
But
you sell bridges too?
Sell bridges?
You sell bridges?
Yeah. I didn't get a chance to really fill out my notes, but we are working right now with the Gustafson family on a permanent easement that will take us onto an 80-acre parcel that will allow us access into Hawkinson. So that'll be our west access. I've talked about that in the past. They're willing to sell us a property, but we agreed to an easement because it would have messed up their ability to build on that property had we bought a small 100 by 100 foot chunk. And so that is moving forward right now, and I would suspect that we're going to close on that probably in the next month or so, I hope so. What else? I think that's it. I don't have a lot else that I've had a chance to really write down. Got a lot of projects that are coming up with all the decision packages that were approved. We've got projects that we're trying to move forward on, and so some of those are involving the Heritage Farm. Hawkinson's another one. Camp Hope taking that master plan to actually permitting is our next step there. And so at Philida Park, we're working on the children's garden and the overflow parking lot. Up at HB Fuller, we're working with the baseball and soccer to replace or to do a complete grind out and repave of the parking lot, which is a $300,000 maintenance expense. Yikes. That's coming up this
The Philida parking lot piece, is it just a stormwater issue that you're waiting on for the paving of that parking lot, or?
No, that's just maintenance. It's just getting the money. Mm-hmm. But the one thing we do have to do stormwater on is they want to add asphalt into the common areas in between the ball fields. And so they just got done paying for a sewer line to come in so they can afford a new restroom and to plumb in their concession. So they're paying for that out of their fees. And then it's a matter of putting asphalt around the common areas, which is all gravel right now. And that actually allows for better ADA accessibility, yeah. Which is cool.
Great.
So it's kind of a joint partnership between us and the leagues, which is, it's working out really well. So
great.
I like it. It's nice.
You're the master of partnership, Bill.
Hey, we try to keep it busy, try to keep things moving. So that's what it's all about. So I really appreciate all your help. The one thing, when it comes to grants, I mean, we have a grant cycle coming up, and I don't even know what the status is, if we're going to be even eligible for grants this year, given what's going on in Olympia, but or in the county, you know.
We'll be with the Park Foundation.
Yes. The comp plan. But Pat has got he's got a whole load of grants that he's going to be going after, if he can. And then I am definitely going after the Curtin Springs Community Park, which is a MPD park that is yet to be built. And I need to take a hard look at what projects we want to focus in on, what grants we want to go after. I'll probably come back to you in February and with a list of strong possibilities that we can kind of take a look at and prioritize. Like we did back in early 2016, we'll do the same thing. Grants are going to be due in May, so that'll give us the time to focus in and work on those. The one thing, so we do not have a grant writer, obviously, but our staff, we do have some trained staff. We also do have Jane Tessner-Kleiner, who used to be with Vancouver Clark Parks, and she was in LA. And she's got some grant writing ability, and she's opted to help us out, as well as Jeff Mize. He's a really good writer, and he has opted to help us. What's that? He's our PIO.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's actually opted to help out too. So we do have some help with writing grants if we want to go forward with them. And so I'll probably be coming to you with some projects at this next PAT meeting. And we can take a look and see which ones we want to go after collectively. Okay?
Great.
All right.
All right. Thanks for your report. Okay, so we've come to the roundtable discussion part of our meeting, and we have 10 minutes left by the old clock on the wall. So start with you, Kevin.
I will pass, except for Deb. Congratulations to the addition to your family.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I hope you're getting some night's sleep once in a while.
And happy birthday to Dave as well.
Oh, wow.
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
How do you keep track of that stuff, Barb? It's impressive.
Facebook.
She stopped.
All right, Bill.
I'm good.
Good? Yes. Kinsey?
Dave? Just excited for another year. Let's do it.
All right. Yeah.
I have a message from Kelly. He's spending all his time trying to get on. His message was something about they don't have internet neutrality over there. And as such, internet today is strong 1 minute, weak for a while, and then flickers to an off state. So he was never able to Skype in. He says, say hi to everyone, and I will email the signed document to Laura tomorrow. So he misses us, but he said next month he'll be in Mendoza, Argentina, and so he's expecting that he should have no problem Skyping from there.
Cool.
And then he'll be home the next month.
All right. Okay,
I got nothing else on him.
Nothing else?
That was Kelly.
That was it?
I got nothing.
All right. I'll pass.
I'm going to do a plug for Race for Warmth this year. My mother-in-law is a beauty commissioner, and she want me to. It's a race to raise money for people who struggle to pay their heating and electric bills. It's January 28th, down by the PUD. If you don't want to walk or run, you can sleep in for warmth, and they still send you the t-shirt. So it's a good
sleep in for warmth?
Yeah.
I love it.
So you can sign up for that on their website.
Snuggle
in for warmth, yeah. Upbrand that. And it's a fun, you know, it's usually cold and rainy, but there's lots of people and kids, and Chuck's gives you treats before, and then they serve you hot soup for free afterwards, and cool. Like a tent with heat, so just encouraging people to do it.
You taking up collection also?
No, I actually can't do it this year. We're going to be in California, so I will be sleeping in for warmth and still getting my shirt.
Cool.
So.
Sarah?
I just want to give Diana a big kudos for smooth and proper use of the word parsimoniously in the middle of that thing. That was just, it stopped me cold for a second. I thought I'd come from Camus. I don't have that many syllables in my vocabulary. That was it.
They didn't use that word in the middle then, right? Exactly. Jennifer?
Just schools, our hottest issue every day is really looking at the state budget and seeing if they can pull together a 2017 budget and how that will affect the funding for schools that are requesting SCAP or state assistance for those projects that are supposed to be funded out of the 2017 or the 2018 release date, which is a July release date. So in Vancouver, we don't foresee if they pass a budget. Sometime between now and a year from now, we don't foresee there being a financial concern for us based on our processes that we have. But I know there are a lot of projects across the state of Washington that are indefinitely on hold and don't have the funding to continue, which is exponentially more expensive for their projects to get complete in their community. And so really, that's from a facilities and a bond program, that's our biggest challenge we're faced with. We start the planning of a King Elementary School on the 26th. This month, we also kicked off several K-3 CSR classroom expansions at five other schools: Fruit Valley, Eisenhower, Salmon Creek, Phillida, and Harney. So we're actively spending taxpayers' bond contributions, and it's pretty exciting.
Is King a full replacement?
King's full replacement, yeah. So Ogden is, we'll go out to bid on April 4th, and then we will be moving in July, August of 2019. As those kids are out for the summer, they'll transition their things to the new school, and the King Elementary teachers will transition their things into the old Ogden School, and that old Ogden School will be a Hauser School for just 1 year while King is demoed and rebuilt on site. Then they'll come back. So.
Yeah, I was in a portable when I subbed it.
Wow.
With a rabbit that I was responsible for.
That's indoor air quality issue all by itself. Portable,
she's
indoor,
like,
air quality.
She was like, you can take the rabbit out of the cage. I was like, no.
No.
I don't want to.
So anyway, I mean, I know our community, our kids are, we're excited for it. So
that's cool. Yeah. You're busy. It's amazing. That's,
yeah, great. we're really busy. We've hired two other leads in our office that will help do some of the work. So we're hopeful that that's going to alleviate some of the intense
Miss Laura?
Just a reminder that, well, not a reminder, just a heads up that we will be meeting over at our operations center in building B1 for February. There was a non-communication miscommunication on reserving this room for February. So we do have it reserved for the rest of the year, but February there was a faux pas on my part.
So. And you have that noted on our agenda.
That is highlighted on the left-hand column.
Do you guys want me to see if I can find us a big room in City Hall that has all the plug-in stuff with the screen and stuff, I could probably get us into Ask.
We have a screen and yeah, we have Wi-Fi there that we can access our files easily. So I think we're okay.
Yeah. And that's on the 9th?
Yeah, the street. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the same one as NAP meets in, right?
Yep.
Yes. Yeah.
Same one.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that the building with the gates?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't have to go through the gates. I have absolutely nothing.
Okay.
Okay. St. Patty's Day for Parks is, I've got the most beautiful thing. This is a happy thing.
God, everyone thinks I'm the big bad wolf now.
I just think you want to be the big bad wolf.
Like everyone's like,
no. We love that you. You take a stand and we know where you're
coming from.
I love
Kelsey more than anybody else. She's just wonderful.
So let's go have a drink, Diane.
Let's go have a drink.
Okay.
Okay, Camp Hope.
Yes.
Camp Hope is having their gala. And they're having their gala.
Sounds fun.
Oh, see? And they would love to have us all there. And their gala is on 2/9 from 5:30 to 8. And they actually have
right after our meeting.
Right after our meeting.
Yeah.
So we can have happy hour at your place, and then we just all drive up. Bad idea. Anyway, I would like everybody to go. We gave them a wonderful grant last year. We went out and we saw Camp Hope this summer with our board. Anybody who would like to go, they have a table for us. I've invited members of my board. So if you guys can make it, it would be really nice.
5:30
to 9. And it will be at Battleground Community Center.
On what day?
On
the 9th.
The 9th. February 9th. It's Friday night. You're going to have a silent auction. It's really going to be wonderful.
Is there a flyer or information available I can send out to everybody?
I think it's online.
It's online, so, but yeah. I will ask them if they have something that they can send us because it's on Facebook.
Okay.
So I'll see if I can send it out. They've got a table, and so it's not going to cost you guys anything. It's like $50 a ticket, but they've got a table. So let me know who might be interested in going.
I know I'm going. So
I'm going.
So I got to get a babysitter for the meeting. And then.
Sarah, are you available? Or do you want to go to the gala?
That's the problem, right?
But it would be nice to have a nice presence from the Parks Advisory Board and the Parks Board to be there.
Yes, that'd be great.
So we'll be celebrating that. We have St. Patty's Day for Parks coming up the 10th of March, and the Parks Foundation's slogan for 2018 is Unplug, Play, Explore. Mm-hmm. And we've got our marketing committee that we put together. We have DeWills, IQ Credit Union, The Real Estate Group, Terry Murphy Custom Interiors, Clark County Association of Realtors, Nautilus, Lee Rafferty from the former Vancouver Downtown Association, Engage for Good, and us working on marketing for 2018. And one of the things I think I've noticed over the last year is we haven't really got a message out. So we want to tout the beautiful things that are happening. Lewis and Clark Trail Project is going to be on our biggest driver this year. And then we're going to go through and feature parks and trails throughout the community. So we're really excited about it. We're going to be doing just a tease for our summer is popsicles and parks. We're going to be driving the big Nautilus bike around. It's a fat tire bike. And we're going to be handing out popsicles. So plan on doing that in 5-inch heels. That's going to be my signature. So that's going to be our marketing campaign.
Right on.
All right. With that, I think we're adjourned.
1 minute.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, one thing. Subcommittee work sessions. Sorry about that. I'm going to look down. Barbara, you want to go over that?
Marketing and partnerships, meet in this corner. We just have a 5-minute quickie meeting.
Okay. And then, let's see, we have trail open space, intertwine.
I feel like Kevin and I put all of our energy into the shred, and we're still recovering from post-shred, so we're going to take this month off.
Okay. With that, we're now adjourned. Thanks. Sorry.
I need a gavel.
Yeah.